Blog Talk Radio. You're listening.
Okay. Hey, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. We are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. That was supposed to be an intro going on there. It kind of went, but didn't. So anyway, I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who's practiced for over 30 years.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci.
You just can't tell sometimes. But hey, it's a good intro. So anyway, I'm going to get back to it. Tonight's show is Living with Autism, a Very Special Way of Life. I'm going to remind you that if you are going to hear what we have to say tonight, please remember to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program, as even though our guests are exceptionally highly credentialed. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, and you can also direct questions and comments to blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blog Talk Radio, and of course, join our group on Facebook. We have a Whole Scoop group. It's a forum for everyone to talk about. We're throwing out all kinds of suggestions for potential shows. We're doing all kinds of things. It's really, really great, and I appreciate all the comments. So please do that. Remember, the number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions later on in the show. At that time, I'll be calling out the last four digits of your telephone number. And if you are calling in, remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for questions. So with that being said, let me tell you who's joining us tonight, because we really, the name of the show says it all. We have Stephanie Brenner. She is a registered licensed dietitian. And, you know, Stephanie describes herself, and I'm going to tell you that in full disclosure, I know her personally, and what I'm about to say about Stephanie is absolutely true. She is a compassionate and dynamic woman who incorporates her educational, professional, and personal experiences and skills as both a nutrition consultant and an advocate for individuals on the autism spectrum and their families. She is co-founder and former president of the Autism Directory Service, and she has held a variety of positions in the field of nutrition in both clinical, private, and public health settings. In addition, she has published research, has written numerous articles, and helped edit several nutrition books. Stephanie has been a presenter on both nutrition and autism topics and has been a guest speaker on both local and national radio stations and television. She's also presented at the National Autism Society of America Conference. Again, she's a registered licensed dietitian who did her dietetic internship at Emory University School of Medicine, obtained her master's degree from Teachers College, Columbia University in Nutrition and Public Health, and completed a postgraduate fellowship in leadership and education for neurodevelopment disabilities at New York Medical College Westchester Institute of Human Development in New York. Stephanie says that perhaps her greatest wealth of knowledge has been from raising her three children, most notably her 28-year-old son, Michael, who is challenged with autism, hydrocephalus, and visual impairments and multiple food allergies. Joining her and us tonight is Marilee Tehan Sarchet. She is a speech-language pathologist who began her work in speech-language pathology in 2001. Following many years of working in nonprofit health and human services settings, she brings her undergraduate study in psychology to bear an approach to speech therapy that centers on relationship as the ground from which all meaningful communication grows. She is the owner of Tehan Sarchet Speech Therapy, where she does contract work with private and public schools, for-profit, nonprofit clinics, and works with rehabilitation and nursing facilities. She has a thriving practice where she works with children and adults with a variety of communication disorders, including autism, and has a multitude of experience. And I need to tell you that I know both of these ladies, and they are fabulous women. So that being said, let's bring them on. Marilee, Stephanie, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Carol. Hi, Marilee. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a show that I know is special in so many ways, but Stephanie, especially to you. You know, I think the people joining us pretty much have an idea of all the statistics that are attached to autism or to the spectrum or to surrounding situations of any type. So I'm going to – I usually start out the show like that. I'm skipping all of that. I want to kind of get right to it. I want to give you – I want to give both of you a lot of time to just kind of be a part of this discussion, and that's how we're going to do this tonight. We're just going to talk. So that being said, Steph, do you want to kind of – bring us up to speed a little bit about your experiences as both, I mean, you just kind of cross all worlds here with all of your experience and you know, your wonderful experience as a mom and all of that. So maybe you could just kind of start us off and then we'll just chat.
Okay, sure. First, I just wanted to say that I do have a little bit of a cough, so I apologize to the audience ahead of time if I'm coughing too much. I'm doing my best. And I also want to thank Mary Lee because I obviously got involved with autism and developmental disabilities because I had a son. I have a son who was born with this challenge, and you chose this profession to work with people with challenges, and I commend you. So you actually want to do it, as I commend you for that very much. And there's a lot of the news about autism, especially in the last decade, which is wonderful. When Michael was diagnosed, you didn't hear anything about autism. The only thing that I knew, really, was about Rayman that I saw when my son was 1 year of age, and The Boy on St. Elsewhere, which was a TV show, I think in the 70s or 80s, and the boy had autism. So it was really confusing, and my vision of someone with autism was a headbanger and things like that. I had maybe read a little bit in a psych class at one point. And at the time, when Michael was born, it was 1 in 2,500 had classic autism. Now the definition has widened and is more broad, and there's been more and more diagnosis, and it's questionable if it's, you know, if it's just, if the numbers are really rising, a better diagnosis. But now the CDC actually, I believe it's about 1 in 68, is somewhere on the spectrum. And the spectrum includes anything from basically you want to have, that you want to, in order to have a definition, it's a neurological developmental disorder that affects your communication, socialization, and play. And it just sounds very general, but when you have a communication disorder, if you actually are unable, you do not know how to socialize and play, it is extremely frustrating, and you don't have the affect. So it's hard to know what someone really wants and what someone really needs or what someone really feels, because often their language is behavioral, and you don't want to just punish someone. You know, you want to know what it's like. So as frustrating as it is for a parent or a teacher or any type of therapist, it's so much harder for them, and I always try to remember that when my son is having a meltdown. Some people with autism don't ever speak. Some are actually hyperverbal, but their language may be very narrow. They may talk a lot, but just on one or two particular topics. So there's a whole range of abilities. Most do not live independently, and with all the therapies and early treatments, we're making some strides. So I'm talking a lot just in general. I hope that's okay.
Good. And I
just wanted to give people who don't really know that much about autism just to, you know, get a sense of a little bit more of what it is. So.
No, thank you for that. I think it's much needed. Yeah, thank you.
Should I tell a little bit about Michael and his journey, or do you want to? I'll just jump in. Should I just jump in, or does Mary Lee want to add anything?
One thing I would like to add, Stephanie, is I think you pointed out so well is that it is a spectrum disorder. And so, like you said, there's individuals who are hyperverbal, individuals who don't talk at all, and anything and everything in between. And sometimes it gets so easy for people who don't have personal knowledge or involvement to hear the diagnosis and forget about the individual that, mm-hmm. you know, we're really,
thank you. Yes.
We're just talking about people people, and just like the rest of us, everybody is different and brings different things to the table. And I think that that's always something to keep in the forefront whenever we're talking about
right.
Any kind of.
We in the Hudson Valley where I used to live, a few organizations, including the Autism Directory Service, which I co-founded, we had conferences, and they were actually titled Autism the Person. And then there would be a subtitle underneath of the particular thing we were focusing on to remember that they have that they're a person first. And it's hard to sometimes remember that. And we also, in many respects, as you said, they're no different than anyone else. I have two other children, neurotypical children. And when they were younger, if they got upset with something or mad at me or whatever, there could be door slamming or rolling of the eyes or whining and, you know, so on and so forth, yelling sometimes. And, of course, what they may be upset about is if I didn't let them go to an unsupervised party, let's say, or, they, you know, I didn't let them go someplace or clean their rooms or whatever. Where Michael may get upset if he doesn't get to watch the TV program he wants or he wants, you know, a certain colored crayon that we don't have. So the things may be different. And then, of course, his frustration might be screaming and a meltdown and not just a little, when I say little, quote-unquote, slam of the door, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, oh, Mom, can you drive me to the mall type of thing. You know, so so I have to remember that he's maybe a grown man now, but he sometimes really acts like that frustrated teenager or frustrated young child that doesn't get what they want, but he can't express it, so it comes out in an inappropriate or atypical or what we consider not normal way. And just so it's very hard to remember. I mean, sometimes we have to say, okay, Michael, okay, stop it. You know, he's so smart that he kind of uses the autism card sometimes, and we actually joke about it. And some people look at us like, oh my God, how could you say that? But okay, a disclaimer, it's true. We all say it in my household, oh, come on, Michael. We know what you're doing, you know. And then other times we don't know what he's doing, and we know there's a reason in his world. There is a reason, you know, why, you know, this has to be lined up like this or, you know, and we just don't know what the reason is, and it's so frustrating, you know.
Well, I think I kind of want to jump in just a bit and back you guys up a little bit, because this is all we're talking about, how difficult it is sometimes to communicate or how communication is actually different. And that's all well and fine, but maybe, Steph, you can kind of bring us through a little bit about when Michael was growing up and the kinds of things you had to put in place for those. The point I'm trying to make here is that living with autism, you know, the name of the show is Living with Autism, A Very Special Way of Life, in that you just said it perfectly, in that you're a family unit, you try to go on with normal activity, you do go on with normal activities, everybody has their own situations going on all at the same time, and you're trying to also figure out where Michael is in his world, but you had to put some things in place to learn Michael's behaviors a little bit. And so I'm trying to back that up just a bit, and Mary Lee, maybe you can jump in too and kind of let people understand that you know, first you get this diagnosis, and then what do you do, or how do you do, or how should you think, or you understand where I'm going with
this? Oh absolutely. Well, I just want to give a little background about Michael and about me. Every parent has their story with typical and neurotypical kids, and every person with autism, and everyone's story is different. But what brings us together on the same playing field is that none of us asked for a child with a disability, and certainly not autism. We were not trained for this. We didn't expect it. There's nothing that we did knowingly at all that caused it. So we were all, that shock. And I'm sure most parents, anyway, are excited to have a child. And as educated as I was and working and a news junkie and was very aware of world events and everything, I was busy worrying about what border should I have? Should it be bears or clowns? Should I have the room in pastels or primary colors? Like, I was so caught up in the nursery and the baby and just the dreams that I had for him or her at the time, and, you know, just all the first words and first steps and, you know, school plays
and Michael's
and sports
your firstborn,
and all
right?
that stuff. He's my firstborn. And even if it's your second or third or fourth, I'm sure maybe you kind of get a little bit, maybe not as excited, but because you know what's coming or you think you know what's coming, but it's still your baby and you have these hopes and dreams. And, of course, it was a little different with my son because we found out just prior to his birth that he had hydrocephalus, which is fluid on the brain, which is supposedly not related, but, well, you know, never know if one insult caused the other. But he had to have a shunt put in when he was a newborn that drains the fluid, and he had a very large head, and because of that he has visual impairments and some muscle tone problems. So for us initially, the delays that he might have had or things that seemed abnormal were, you know, we blamed on that. And some of them were, and some of them weren't. But he was basically a really good baby and just, you know, a joy for the most part and, you know, typical things. And he did have, and I will just tell the story because I think it is important, and which kind of was the foundation of how we raised Michael. He, because he had a larger head and weak tone, he couldn't lay on his stomach and lift his head and push up like most 2-month-old or 3-month-old babies do. So the therapist would come, physical therapist, and work with him and try to motivate him and so on and so forth to try to get him to lift his head, to want to lift his head, to work towards a goal, like we all do when we go to the gym or whatever our goal is, right? So to have that motivation. And one day, you know, the therapist left and Michael was still on his belly. He was about 6 months old. And I went to put on a video. It was a Disney sing-along video that Michael used to like a lot. And when he heard the music of the video, I could see the fingers pressing into the carpet on the floor. And he was struggling. And it probably was only about 20 seconds where I watched this, but it felt like eternity. And then I finally sat him up. But the next time I waited maybe a minute or two, and then 2 or 3 minutes, and so on and so forth. And by the end of 6 weeks, Michael watched a 27-minute video on his stomach with his head, you know, pushed his hands up and his head held high. And the reason why I tell that story is it was so difficult for me. I felt like I was, you know, torturing my kid here. But I realized that the struggle was worth the success and that things were not going to come easy. So when his diagnosis of autism came, I just took that approach that some things were going to be really hard, but that's okay. And I had to remember that. But Michael, on the positive side, he spoke at 6 months. He clapped at 6 months, which was early. He built a 6-block tower at 1 year. We have pictures to prove it. Most kids only do about 2 blocks. He knew all his shapes and stuff by 15 months. And he was very advanced, even though he was very different. But soon those objects just became, those little blocks became objects to throw against the wall, and all he cared about was really not much. It got harder to take him out in public. He seemed indifferent even to his new little sister. I couldn't go to the park if there was another child on another swing. I didn't know why. He'd be great one moment, and then the next moment, he would, if there were children around, he would start crying. He stopped playing. He stopped clapping. So it was, you know, it was a very dark, very, very, very dark time. So when the diagnosis came, first I thought, well, maybe I was raising him wrong, that I was this crazy mother because my child was in the ICU when he was born type thing. So I didn't no longer had the guilt that I did anything wrong, but then I realized there was such a bleak diagnosis in those days, and there wasn't the internet, and there wasn't all these therapies. So it was very, 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 very scary, and the realization was all of a sudden those shattered dreams. So if you meet a parent with a child with a developmental disability, you know, they had the same hopes for their child that you may have for yours, that he or she could be president if they wanted to. And all of a sudden, I'm forgetting about going to college or dancing at his wedding. I just hope he'll be able to talk. I hope he'll be able to call me mommy someday. You know, it just totally, everything changes. So during the course of,
I'm sorry.
Your perspective. Yeah, your perspective changes. Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then your normal becomes different.
Normal becomes different. Normal, okay. Right. Or different becomes normal is probably a better
right.
way of putting it.
Yeah,
and the diagnosis didn't change Michael. In other words, he was still the same boy he was the day before I got the diagnosis. But it just changed the future. It didn't really change the present. And I'm going back to your original question. This is actually what I wanted to start with, is that when I went to when I spoke to my pediatrician, and I kind of felt like, okay, well, Michael has a really hard time going out, and it was always stressful when we went out. Well, I don't want to stress him, so maybe I should just get a sitter, and this way he'll stay home, he'll be happy, and I'll take my daughter and my husband, and we'll go out and we'll do things, and I won't feel guilty because this is really better for him not to go out. Why do you want your kid to be stressed? And he said, absolutely not. You take his music box, you take his blue, he had a little blue ball he used to bounce all the time. You take those things with you and you take him, because he'll never be able to be part of society if you don't push him to be part of society. And I might seem like a pushy mother sometimes. I think some of the staff, when my son lives with some of the staff that at the high school and middle school and stuff, probably thought I was. But it was this drive that Dr. Aronson had said to me many, many, many years ago. And we did. And there were times when, I have to admit, we didn't take him on certain things, but we did. But it did impact our family in the sense that the reality is that we still couldn't do a lot of things, even with the music box or even with food or even with his ball, you know, his games. We couldn't take him into a place that had a lot of people. He would just cry and it would be scream. It wasn't fair to any of us. We couldn't go on certain vacations. It changed that
right.
I stopped working. So it had that impact on the family. Another pediatrician gave good advice to Larry and myself, my husband, that we still needed to be a couple, that there's a very, very high divorce rate. And I even think about the two other women that I co-founded ADS with, and both of them in the process had gotten divorced. And I know divorce is common in, you know, many marriages, unfortunately.
Right.
But I saw it happening before my eyes, many, many couples.
You know what?
And alarming number.
Steph, I'm going to stop you right there for just a second, because I want to talk about that,
sure.
But I want to give Mary Lee a chance to join
Absolutely.
In here first and just say, I know that based on what Stephanie just said, that our approaches are a little bit different. I want to do one thing. I kind of want to remind people what we're doing here, and I'm going to try this one more time because we didn't get it in the beginning of the program, and I'm really hoping this thing works. So just let me
You're
play.
Listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferrazzi.
Okay, so that worked. And remember, the number to call in is 347-855-8894. And we're talking with Stephanie Brenner and Mary Lee Tehan-Sarche. And we're about to hear from Mary Lee. Maybe you can give us a little bit of ideas or pointers as to what we do now as opposed to what Stephanie was faced with then, and how things have evolved or changed a little bit.
Sure. Yes, Stephanie's absolutely right. It was a different world. 25, 30 years ago, we had very limited understanding, and we had the diagnosis was made much, much less often. And we did not have the internet, which is a big thing. So the support that people find today is much, much broader, as well as all of the research that's going on and the various therapeutic approaches. I think that for autism, for most all people, communication is a major, major concern and a major deficit. And that is part of the diagnostic criteria. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow there.
Uh-huh.
I was just going to say, like, when Stephanie was talking about, should she take Michael out, should she not, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, thing with her pediatrician saying, yes, you take this with them, you take, you know, what
Absolutely.
Kinds of things do you recommend now, and
same.
What kinds do you work with now? And I know that everyone's different, but there's got to be just kind of some kind of, you know, common ground there.
Sure. And I think that, you know, you if you have an individual like Michael, who really freaks out, going into crowds, being around other people. It's really like we do with a lot of things. It's a desensitization process. And what my recommendation is for parents is that you start slowly. It's like working out. You know, you're not going to say, gee, I'm going to run a marathon tomorrow. You're going to work up.
What kind of little things do you do at first?
Brief outings. So if an outing itself is very stressful for the child, for the individual, then you work on just getting to the car and go back.
Right.
So you're talking really baby steps.
Really baby steps. And again, it's going to depend on the individual. First, the person who it's no problem to get in the car and go to the store, it's just getting out of the car and going into the store, then you just practice going to the door of the store and turning around and going back, and then you practice a minute in the store. But you don't start out by saying, okay, we're going to do our weekly grocery shopping.
And that's something that we know now. We didn't know this then, right? I'm sorry, Steph, we're going to use Michael tonight, but, you know, Michael may have freaked out then, but there's been a lot of work for the last 28 years to get Michael to not do that, but at the same time, he has his moments, right?
Carol, I was going
to. No, you're good. You're good. I just wanted to make the point that it's an evolutionary process. Would I be correct
saying
that?
Right, and you have to try this. There's no certain strategies. Some children and adults do better with sensory. Mm-hmm. Some do better with behavioral. You know, there's a whole gamut of different therapies and what approaches. Visual strategies, I have found, and I'm sure Merrily will confirm this, really help the majority of people with autism. Even my son with visual impairments. What we started doing is taking pictures of places that we were going and put them on index cards.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were going to go to the supermarket, if we were going to go to the doctor, if we were going to go wherever, I hated birthday parties because he hated them, but I tried them. You know, if we were going to go to a birthday party at McDonald's, it's the park. So we would have a picture, and I would say it, but I would pair it with a picture, and I would say that. And that really helped to a degree. We also, what we do to this day, actually, is something I call previewing. And before we go someplace, and if I know he's going to have a hard time at a particular place, and it's usually with Michael involving electronics. It has to do with DVDs and videos and CDs and all that stuff. He's still obsessed with them, and he's gotten a lot better, but recently he's regressed. So it's like alcohol for an alcoholic, and I hate to make an analogy like that, but it's true. It's like having an open bottle of whiskey and telling someone you can't drink, you know. So to be in a store with videos, DVDs now, back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when was he born? I forgot, in the 90s or whatever. It was video. So we would say, okay, Michael, we're going to go to whatever, Barnes & Noble, and we're going to go read some books, and if you have good behavior, we could get one, blah, blah, blah. How many can you get? One. And what kind of behavior do you need to have? You know, and we would go through that, and I would have to remind him. And, I would have to constantly remind him. And we also, there was a strategy called social stories. I don't know if Merrily, you've used them, but they work really, really well. And they're basically very, very, very short stories, like one line per page, maybe five pages. And you could use pictures for those who can't read. And we always ended it, and Michael and everyone will be happy. You know, the idea is sort of addressing what Michael would like to do, but what the obstacle is, what can we do instead, and everyone's happy. I haven't done them in a while, but that's that. And sequencing, so we would say, go to the dentist, and this is what you do. Then we would actually act out. I would have Michael go to the dentist, but just watch me in the dental chair. He would go to the dentist and just sit in the dental chair. Now, I was very fortunate that my cousin
Mary
was
Lee,
a dentist. He had patients.
I don't really mean to cut you guys off because this is just so interesting, but I just kind of want to get some clarification in, too, for everybody that's listening. So just forgive me, okay? I'm not trying to be rude here. But Mary Lee, would you, are these the kinds of things that you're practicing now with your clients in terms of these kinds of, you know, steps that need to be happening? Because
It's all the what Stephanie is talking about. I mean, you know, you're basically preparing the child for this experience that could be stressful, and it's not unlike what you're going to do with any child who's going to enter into a stressful situation. You want to, like the dentist example, you take your neurotypical child to the dentist, but you don't take them there to get a bunch of fillings the first time. You take them to go to the dentist and sit in the chair or watch mommy get her teeth cleaned. So it's a lot of that same type of thing. I think that the visual supports are always important from the beginning of just daily self-help skills. What do you do first, next? How do you wash your hands and you use soap and you dry your hands? All of those things you can do in visual sequence, in photographs with words, and you basically use the same language. Repetition is, for all learning, is very important. And so we try to keep the language initially very direct and simple and consistent, so you're not using different vocabulary for the same activity as initially until the child really masters that vocabulary, and then you start expanding pretty much like we do with our neurotypical kids. I think that what I have found really works best is just recognizing that I don't know what's going to work for this child, for any particular child. And so I want to bring everything that I can possibly bring to the table. And that includes the photograph, that includes sign language, that includes verbal, and also we always have, whether we try or not, we always have our gestures and our facial expression and our body language. And so all of that comes into play. And then I let the child, I see what the child gravitates toward. So I will start out with a nonverbal child with making requests, let's say. So, because I know that's going to be something really motivating. I'm not going to start with something that the child's uninterested in. So whatever that child's interested in. So if it's goldfish crackers, then I'm going to start with goldfish crackers. And they're going to have a photograph of goldfish crackers. They're going to see the sign for cracker, and they're going to get the verbal. And then I model each one. I have all of that available, and I watch and see what the child responds to. And it may vary from day to day, but it's always there, and they have an option. And I have to share the story because it really was amazing to me. I had a child I was seeing, and he was 3, almost 4, and I was working with him on social greetings and parties, saying hello and goodbye, or waving hello and goodbye, or pointing to the hello card or the goodbye card, whatever he wanted to do, but just acknowledge a greeting and a parting. And I would either have to pick up his hand and wave, and I'd always cue him, you know, it's time for me to go. I'd cue him, and he wouldn't do anything, and I'd pick up his hand, wave, say, goodbye, goodbye. Or I'd put his hand on the goodbye card, goodbye, tell me goodbye, you know. And so one day he looked at me, and I said, okay, it's time for me to go. And he just looked at me, and he goes, pack up your horse, just like, you know. And it was so cool. I mean, he never said goodbye. But just, you know, and it's like that moment where you know that the word is not really...
That all of it got through. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, And, you know, in a cool way, in a very unique
Fabulous, Lori. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm gonna add to that for a second, because I know Stephanie's not gonna say this, and I'm gonna say it. I have had the honor of meeting Michael 4 or 5 times. I've seen him in different situations. He's an absolutely fabulous person, and I actually am in awe of all the things that he's accomplished. He's a fabulous musician, singer. He will just spontaneously pick up and start playing the piano. But I also know how much work has gone into getting Michael to that point. And everything that you just described, Mary Lee, from a professional standpoint and working with your clients, and Stephanie, from a personal standpoint and working with Michael, it is that, and I'm going to call it, it's that moment, that one special moment where you know that things are getting through, that I wanted to kind of make the point that anybody listening, when we say that this is a very special way of life, it requires an awful lot of time, attention, patience, repetition, a whole bunch of different things that have to come into play all at the same time. But then look at what you get in return. And I'm going to give Stephanie an occasion to let everybody be able to access some clips from Michael later on in the show so that you can see Michael yourselves. But I think that it's real important to understand that these things happen slowly, but they do happen. Would you guys agree with that?
Right. Well, you know, thank you, Carol. Absolutely. And if I have to add to what Mary Lee was saying when you were talking about breaking things down and step by step, and two reactions. One was, oh, my God, that's my life. Does it fix everything from how to get dressed and how to eat and how to just greet someone when they come to the door and, I mean, how to go to the dentist, all that stuff. But just to let you know, when we were teaching him how to brush his teeth, there are 19 steps to brushing your teeth. And I chuckled because I still remember that. We did an article about it, my group, ADS, and you don't realize. You just grab your toothbrush, right? You know, you think it's not no big deal. Well, you have to get your toothbrush after you wet your toothbrush. You have to brush your upper teeth, the down teeth, you know, front and back, you know. Then you have to rinse your mouth. You have to rinse the toothbrush. You have to put it down. You have to clean the sink. You know, 19 steps. So we had the before, we had the during, and we had the after. And we broke it down. We mastered one, we mastered the next, we mastered it. It's like brushing your teeth. You know, that's all we're teaching. You know, so I earned every wrinkle I have. You know, that's all I have to say. I've earned every wrinkle on my face.
Everybody that's listening is going, you know this, everybody that's listening is going, oh, my God, really? And they hadn't thought about it like that. So if you multiply out just basic activities of daily living, you know, bathing, eating, you know, sleep, everything, dressing.
And we're not even talking about the crazy things that they might do, like, you know, decide to pull their pants down in public or pick their nose and eat it. I mean, it sounds gross. I know typical kids do some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're not even talking about, you know, meltdowns or whatever or doing other things, you know, as they get older, you know, men in particular, teenage boys, I'll leave it to your imagination, you know, in public, things like that. That can, besides all that, just those other little things it becomes a way of life that you don't, while you're going through it,
you don't even think about it anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. And you're also trying to juggle, if you have other children, like I had 2 other children, they need love and attention as well, and they still need to be taught things and have laughs and, you know, so you're trying to balance that, and you're going to fall short. It's just the reality is
I want to just spend a couple of minutes on this because there's a couple of things I want to get to, and we're going to run out of time. You started to bring it up, and I cut you short before, the stress on the family. And Mary Lee, I'm sure that you see this as a professional as well. Steph, I know that that you started to talk about this. There is stress. There's stress on the family. There's stress on the marriage. there's stress all the way around in trying to deal with this. As you just said, you have two other kids, you're trying to raise two other kids on top of someone, you know, that had special mm-hmm. needs, of even having to break down all the activities of daily living into basic steps, 19 steps to brushing your teeth. I don't know how many steps there are to tying a shoe, but I'm sure you could tell us. So, you know, I just want to take just a couple of minutes on this, okay, ladies?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let me just throw something in. You were earlier, Carol, kind of going through the list of you've got to have patience, you've got to have this, you've got to. I think the main thing is you've got to have a sense of humor and really
yes,
be able
absolutely.
To step back a little bit and just breathe and find a way to just enjoy that moment.
Can I interrupt you one second, Mary Lee?
Sure.
It's so funny that you say that, because a sense of humor, you have to teach people with autism, by the way, to have a sense of humor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful mentor taught me that. But we actually, we don't laugh at Michael. You know, we laugh with him. But let's face it, some
yes.
things are just really funny. And Michael has a habit of, he could go on and on about a subject that he's really interested in. And after a while, you kind of get tired. So just the other day, for example, he was going on and on. He's coming to visit next week, and we're going to a wedding, and you know, then he's going to go see a show, and he's going on and on about all this constantly. Now he's focusing on the show. And I finally said, Michael, how about we now talk about something else? Why don't you ask me a question? Why don't you ask me something about me? And he said, do you want to go see Rock of Ages on May 7th? And it was like, I just laughed, and I think he was on speakerphone, my husband and my son heard, and we just started laughing. I mean, what else could you do? Okay, just throw in the towel.
Right.
You got to sometimes just say, you know, you just got to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
So the sense of humor is really, really important.
Thank you, Mary Lee, for bringing that up, because that is so true, and thank you, Stephanie, for sharing that. What I wanted to do, because we are going to run out of time, if anybody's got a question, please press the number one. There is one question on the blog that I kind of want to hold for just a second. And ironically, I don't think we're getting too many questions on the blog, because people are just listening, and I think that's fabulous. So, but what I want to do is I want to kind of fast forward now, because we talked about Michael a little bit as a child and what it's taken, the kinds of things to get him to the point where he is. And now let's just fast forward. Where is Michael? What kinds of things is he doing? I want, you know, I mentioned the music before.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Kind of let
well,
you know, 28 years,
right.
And this is Michael.
Sure. Well, from the boy that couldn't be in a group of with people and didn't talk and had, you know, trouble, he ended up with all the therapies and all the help, ABA, nutrition, you know, vision, all that stuff, a lot of work. He ended up being in an inclusion program in elementary school with a 1-to-1 aide, and had, with the exception of third grade, had a really good experience, had friends. So I'm going to just talk about that. He actually had sleepovers and, you know, there was real hope. Then, of course, challenges in middle school happened, and he did take 5 years of Spanish and do very well. But the reality was is that his pace of learning was much slower, and we made the decision to go to more functional-type skills. And every parent will get to that at a different point. Some of them won't need that, and other people stick with academics, and others do life skills from the get-go. But anyway, he did graduate high school, and he now is living in a home with support in the Hudson Valley in New York, and he goes to, he has two different day programs, and he's at a farm 2 days a week, which for some people is great. It's okay. It's really just okay for Michael, but they do have some music there, and he does go swimming. One day they take him someplace to go swimming, and he's outdoor with the animals, so that's good. And the other 3 days he's in a pre-vocational program. There are people that put the toothpaste in the boxes and put sponges together and put labels on things, and many of those people are men and women with developmental disabilities that make diddly squat. But he does earn a small paycheck. It may just be $25 a week, but he has the pride of earning money and buying that CD he wants, and he has a rec program. So that's his during the day. And he's very involved with music. He has a music lesson once a week. He volunteers at a nursing home in a music group where he's not the recipient. He's also actively participating in singing and dancing with others with disabilities as well as seniors. And one night a week, he actually is in a chorus group that's, again, it's an eclectic group of people with disabilities, caretakers, and senior citizens. And then it grew that now people in the local community, so it's probably about maybe even 30 people, 20 or 30 people in the group. And Michael's very serious about it. He gets very upset if someone makes a mistake. He has perfect pitch, and he always corrects them. On the other hand, when they get it right, he'll say, good job. He's a good cheerleader. And he loves his computer, and he always has. And he's very into lists, and he has a list of his favorite 88 artists, and, you know, he has binders of them. And he likes to write letters to people, though he rarely mails them. And he loves to dance. He loves the theater. He loves to go to Broadway. He likes some sports. He likes to bike ride, though he doesn't get to do that much. And so those are really the great things. But then what happens with people with autism, and especially Michael's, that I've learned that there are some dark times. It's not just a day or two, that there'll just be a cloud. And, I don't know if it's just a developmental process or he is a form of depression and can't express it. And it seems like, oh, no, he's regressing, it's really bad, and we try to do X, Y, and Z. But I've learned that during the dark times that it's going to pass, that things are going to get better. And then when he's in a period of thriving and doing so well, I've learned not to savor it, but realize that the dark clouds will come, so I just really savor the moments. That being said, he is making strides, but he's been going through a hard time this last year. He's had some loss. My father passed away. One of his therapists that he worked with for many years died suddenly at a young age. You know, a couple of his favorite staff people left. And there could be other reasons that I don't know about. And he's regressing. He doesn't want to even go to his music classes sometimes. He just wants to be in his room more. And for the first time in 28 years, I actually... sad to say that I had him at Barnes & Noble, and he was having a breakdown when I wouldn't give in to him, and I finally had to have someone call the police to help escort me out, or Michael out, I should say. And I could have given in, and maybe in retrospect I should have, to avoid a scene, but his MO has changed. He was totally in good behavior, so there was no indication he was having a problem. And anyway, net, it wasn't a good experience. And so it's still trying. But then this delightful boy, he at his music lesson, he sang. He just is learning the song Something, from the Beatles. And even though he stumbled on a few words, he sang it so beautifully. And then he even did a little gig on the piano. And I watched him.
You have a clip of that, right?
I have a clip. It's not on YouTube. It's on Facebook. I could send it to the whole Scoop Facebook
page. Oh, can you share it on the group page?
Yeah, I'll share it on the group page. Sure, absolutely.
Group page. Okay, so everybody, you can
check
out
Yeah, I think
you
might have seen it, Carol. I don't know if you saw it or not, but it was really special, and it was just, and I'm watching him, and it was 2 days after the incident happened, and I'm thinking, wow, I would love for the police officer and the patrons of Barnes & Noble to see Michael now, So basically, it's scary as a parent because, you want him to be happy. I'm trying to read what he's trying to say. What is he trying to tell me? I don't, the more he's in his room and doesn't go out, my fear is that he won't go out. I'm remembering what the pediatrician said, and you're trying to find that balance of respecting what his wishes are,
right,
too. And so it's, I'm his legal guardian. My husband and I are his legal guardians, and we make decisions for him, but we're not always going to be here. We all know that we don't live forever, and it's a fear, I think, all parents of children, even adults,
right,
with autism, what's going to happen when we die, and it's what keeps me up at night, and
right,
but it also motivates me to make the system better, to help my son.
I think you show that from all the work that you've done and that you continue to do. So we are going to run short here. We've got a question on the board. Remember, if you're going to ask a question or just calling in to kind of join in, press the number one to get in the queue so that I can bring you on. So we've got a little bit of time left, so I'm going to take a question off the board. Is that okay?
Sure.
Sure.
We're going to do caller 8796. 8796. Hello?
Yes. Hello. Yes.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. Hi, Carol and Stephanie. Stephanie, I'm one of your biggest fans. You know that. I'm going to go off. I'm going to go off topic here just a little bit. You know, I work daily with children, and one question that's been really been on my mind is the vaccination and autism. Is there a link?
I'm going to give you, I could tell you what the research shows, and I could give you my opinion, but I think no one really knows. Some parents will swear to it that their child had a vaccination, and they started to regress shortly or immediately afterwards, and I don't think I could challenge a parent that says that. Is it a coincidence? It could be. It's certainly possible because children with autism, you know, they do regress. I did meet a mother who's son had autism, and the second child, she did not vaccinate him, and he ended up having autism. So, you know, is it not? The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, says no. The initial research by Dr. Wayfield in, I think it was England, turned out to be largely fudged, and though Dr. Wayfield still swears, you know, by his research. So the medical answer is no. Many parents will say yes. But I think, I don't believe that the vaccines caused my son's autism. I think his signs were from the get-go, and studies from autopsies do show that there are abnormalities in the brain indicating that something happened in, I believe it's the first trimester or the beginning of the second trimester, whenever the Purkinje cells are being developed, I don't remember exactly. And there are different types of autism, different cause of autism, so I think we're going to find subsets that some autism is probably the insult happened in utero, and maybe there is some cases where it is outside. I believe that some children are probably born with an immature immune system, and if they're getting a lot of vaccines all at once and their body can't handle it, that, yeah, there's probably a chance. This is my personal opinion, by the way. Just want to say, not from a medical standpoint. But I am in the medical field, and I know a little bit. So I could conceivably see that, and if I had another child today, and I would probably advise my other children when they have children to just space them out a little bit. They do take the mercury out. I don't know if it's all of it now. But also, I don't know what I was exposed to. I mean, I had the shot. You know, I had some shots, too. I lived near fields where they were spraying, you know, pesticides, and there's pesticides on grass when you, you know, there's, you know,
I think,
you have plastic bottles. You know, you can't escape everything. So it's so hard to say, but I think it's a personal decision what a parent decides to do. But I personally don't believe that it caused my son's autism.
So
thank you.
And thank you. What I was going to say is there's so many, if you look at the research, there's so many different variables that people are talking about. They're even talking about the immune system and the gut right now. And so it's really kind of
exactly
anybody's guess. But thank you for the question. We've got another question on the board, so we're going to go to that. Unless you have a follow-up. Do you have a follow-up, caller?
No, thank you. Just thanks, Stephanie, for opening up your life to everyone and your
beautiful thought. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your call. Keep on doing great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Caller 5439. 5439.
Hi, Carol, Stephanie, and Marilee. How are you tonight?
Doing good.
Great.
How are you?
Great. My name is Lizzie Sordia, and if I could just add to what you're sharing about your experience, Stephanie, I'm also a parent to a child with disabilities. Although it's not autism, my son has a genetic condition called Angelman syndrome. And it is a very rare condition. And, you know, sometimes when we get the diagnosis, it's devastating for families and we don't really know what to expect, what to do, and we're just kind of immersed into this world of getting support for our kids and also for our families. And what's really worked for me is reaching out to other families in my area. When they said my son's condition was rare, I didn't know how rare they meant. I didn't know if he was the only one in Florida. And so just reaching out to other families, I did find local families here, and just finding that support system has made a world of difference for me. And I started a walk locally in Orlando, and we're preparing for that in May. And that's also just been a real support for me and for other families too, that we're all on this journey together, learning, and we have so much that we can learn from each other, the successes, as well as learning from our failures.
Thank you so much, because you know, we didn't even talk about the support component, did we? We didn't even get to that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yes,
and
thank you.
And thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing your story, Stephanie. It's it's really inspiring, you know, for all the families of challenged families in general.
And on Facebook, if you can, put the information about the walk that you're doing. I would love to share that information
on the group page.
That would be great if you could do that.
That'd be
yeah,
great.
I absolutely
and I'll help will. And I'll help spread the word, because it's the important thing. And you have with your son, I think it's the son you said having a genetic a rare disorder. At the time, autism was considered rare. So that what was one of the goals was to increase public awareness, because I could only take my son so far, but I needed him. I need society to accept him, to embrace him. We call it education, awareness, and tolerance. But it just because his success and others like him was largely dependent on our neighbors, our community. So I think going to community walks, even when you're not personally involved, is something that I like to do, and I think, you know, people, if they can, to go to. So, because we're all linked together, we all need each other in some way. So good luck with that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's just so beneficial, because there's a camaraderie, you know, that we share as parents, and we can share with each other what has worked, what hasn't worked. And again, we're all on our own journeys, but if we can learn from each other, that's so much helpful for us.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's no different than typical kids. You know, it used to be, you know, how do you, let's say, wean a child from a bottle or sleep through the night or whatever. You know, with my son and other parents at the time was, well, how do you get your child to stop biting his hands or his clothes, or, you know, how do you get him to stop whatever, you know, whatever it would be at the time, you know, lining up crayons or pulling down his pants in public, you know, whatever it would be of one of the moms that I would talk to. So it's all moms, you know, all parents, I think, well, moms mostly, I can only speak for moms, speak to other moms about how do you do this, how do you do that. So it's really no different than our kids. It's just that what we're asking questions about is different. So, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
So, good
well,
luck.
Thank you so much, ladies. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you so
much
for sharing that. Please do that on the group page, okay?
I will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, ladies. Well, we are almost out of time. And what I'd like to say is, like, let everybody know that you're going to share, Stephanie, you're going to share information with Michael. Mary Lee, I feel like you probably have a whole lot more to say, and we didn't give it to you that much.
That's all right. Don't worry about it. It's great.
What I will do is I will just have to have you back so we can talk about you and the kinds of things that you can.
I'm sorry. I talk too much, Mary Lee.
No, you
don't.
It was delightful.
No. I want to say thank you to both of you very much, because this was just an enlightening, absolutely enlightening show. Stephanie, thank you for sharing everything. I know that some of that was not easy, and Mary Lee, thank
you. Can I have 30 seconds just to say one thing I wanted to say for parents who are newly sure. diagnosed kids, if they happen to be listening, is that try to keep your goals. Like if you have a strategy and the strategy doesn't work, try another strategy. Don't necessarily change the goal. But if you're trying all these different strategies and they don't change, there's an expression that someone once told me, sometimes you have to go to Velcro. So, if, for example, if you're trying to teach your kid how to tie their shoelaces and you're not successful, then go to Velcro, because the goal is really ultimately independence. So many times, well, we always question ourselves with Michael when we're trying something, okay, is it time for Velcro? And so sometimes there's small things like learning how to ride a bike, and we finally went to an adult trike, and now he loves to ride that, to other things that are much more major. So just as a wanted to throw that in because it's important, because you could get so desperate and so upset when things aren't going right. So not to give up, just find another strategy or just tweak the goal a little bit. So I just wanted to add
right.
that. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh, thank you for that. And Mary Lee, I'm going to give you another 30 seconds to kind of wrap it up from your perspective.
All right. Well, I'll just add on to that in terms of the keeping the big picture in focus, and that what we really want for all of our children and adults is them to be as independent and as happy and successful in whatever they view success to be as possible, and give them the support they need to meet their own unique potential.
Fabulous. Thank you so very much. We're just going to have to, I can tell that we're going to get a lot of archives on this, and people are going to have questions. So can I say that if there are follow-up questions and it comes through the group chat, can you, I can say that you guys will be around at some point to maybe answer a couple of questions, not necessarily tonight, but if they come through, would that be all right?
Sure. Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I want to remind everybody that our next show is on April 28th, and that is going to be one different show for the whole scoop. We're going to be joined by Dr. Lisa Cooney. She is a national celebrity. She has her own Air America radio show, so it's going to be interesting on how well I do with her. She has a following that is in the hundreds of thousands, so there's going to be a lot of people who know her. But what she talks about is how to actually heal yourself, get what you want out of life in the way that you need to get it. So she has an acronym. It's called Live Your Roar, R-O-A-R. And I'm going to let her explain what that means, but trust me, it will be a very interesting show, April 28th, 7 p.m. Join us. Don't forget, because this is not one show that you want to forget. If you're a regular listener to The Whole Scoop, you might want to call in a couple of minutes earlier, because we may have a few other callers, and you might. And as far as the queue goes, I can see who's been on hold the longest. So that's pretty much how we're going to run that. So all that being said, thank you very much. Everybody have a fabulous night. Stephanie, Mary Lee, thank you again. And I look forward to talking to you some more. Good night, everybody.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.